The fact that I've got a Blue Yeti mic, I finally like splurged and paid for like a quality piece of equipment, but I am now, to keep it face level, I have it balanced on a yearbook that's on top of a candle, and I'm now screwing my pop filter onto the yearbook to stay in place. Why spend money on something when I can do something way more complicated to sort of do the same thing?
This is Wasted Information! Wasted Information!
This is Wasted Information. I'm Jimmy.
Brandon.
What are you drinking, Brandon?
I'm drinking Truth IPA from Rheingeist Brewery in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's good. Truth is one of their like staples. Brewed with a nod to the Pacific, hops sizzle with tropical fruit aroma, grapefruit and mango notes, and a dry finish. I hate grapefruit, for anyone who knows me, knows that. And I don't hate this. So that's saying something. What are you drinking, Jimmy?
I am drinking 18th Street Brewery Sex... Jesus Christ.
Sex Jesus Christ.
Fucking mush mouth over here. Like my mouth just got like dry and numb at the same time. Like tongue didn't know what to do.
That's what happened with me on the end of the last happy hour, for those who haven't listened.
Anyway, I'm drinking 18th Street Brewery's Sex and Candy India Pale Ale. And I had to look it up because it's one of those ones, it's mostly can design. There's no real description. I had to
look. Speaking of their can design, when you held it up, I can't see the and, so it just says sex candy to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's the and.
There it is. Okay.
It's got like little candies. It's got whips and fuzzy handcuffs and shit.
Little sexy things and little candies.
Yeah. It's cute. It's black and pink. It's a good color scheme. Well, on Untappd, shout out to that website / maybe app. I don't know.
It is an app.
The description on there says, the enticing smell of Chinook and Cascade hops waft forth from this IPA, benefiting both you and your special friend. Fruity and faintly sweet, sex and candy is simply a dream. Now I just need a special friend to benefit from this beer. One thing I know, like the first sip I took this morning, or yes, this afternoon,
this morning, evening, I mean, keep it going.
What, man, is time?
The it's all imaginary.
The first sip I took, I bought it just... I've seen this in the store a lot of times. I know I like 18th Street Brewery. I know they do a lot of IPAs, a lot of very strong IPAs like Temporal Purgatory, where you drink and it's like, I know someone likes this. I'm not going to shit. It's not bad tasting. It's just aggressive for me.
Very hoppy, very bitter.
This one, I was like, I've seen the can plenty of times. I said, fuck it. I'm just going to pick this one, get it out the way. It is maybe top three best IPAs I've ever drank. And nice. I'm not an IPA fan, but this one's like very smooth.
I would say a lot of you and I don't line up on beer types very often. So the fact that we're both drinking an IPA is cool.
So we're going to be talking about minimalism today. The topic that we started talking about a couple weeks ago before we realized we weren't recording.
And it happens.
It's far enough removed from that day that I don't remember anything we talked about, so we can start from scratch.
Shit, I usually don't remember what we talked about later that night. I was going to say it happens to the best of us, but we're not the best of anything. So
it happens to the okay of us. So anyway, you really introduced me to the idea of minimalism, like as like a labeled thing. Like I kind of understood the concept, but I didn't know the word minimalism till you explained it to me. So give, like, since you're more of the expert than I am, just give a rough synopsis of what it is.
Yeah. So I don't, I like that you started that as I introduced you to the label of minimalism, because I don't like labeling myself necessarily as a minimalist.
But just because the fact that kind of like discovering anything, like people with anxiety that don't know what it is, when you put a word to it, it's like, oh, I didn't know there was a word for it, sort of thing.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I strive to be more minimalist, I guess. So to me, it's more of a mindset, more of a acting and living with intentionality, being very intentional about the things you own, the things you use, things you do in life. And a big part of that, something that makes that easier, being more intentional, is having fewer things. The less things that are cluttering up your life, the less things that get in your way, the less things you have to think about on a day-to-day basis. Over the years, I've tried to systematically go through my things and reduce my things and get down to owning pretty much only the essentials at one point. I would say we own more than that now, but we've added things that bring value to our daily lives. We've added things that we use and that make life easier. So while it may not be essential, it makes it easier and it helps me live more intentionally still. I guess that's the basics of it. Is that generally?
I was just going to come in.
I probably added a few more words there, but
you weren't minimalist in your description, but that's good.
Right.
You need to.
I'm not minimalistic with words, so it's fair. Do you remember, like, we started talking about minimalism or how I introduced you to it?
You told me about the Minimalist podcast. I think that's where it started. And then I listened to, I'm assuming, a bad episode because it was, like, live and it sounded really pretentious just with a live audience of, like, all the people in the crowd laughing along with them. I was like, fuck all those people.
The live ones are interesting. So I did get into it because my wife introduced me to The Minimalists. And I still listen to their podcast. I actually listened to one today. I listened to one of the recent episodes on hoarding. And I generally agree with a lot of their messaging. I tend to agree with one of them more than the other. I think that's in the way they portray themselves. One of them can come off a little more pretentious and a little more... trying to think of the best word for it. I don't know. After a few beers, it doesn't come to me. But
just keep talking. Just talk it out.
I feel like the more approachable you can be on the subject, the better it is and the better it'll be accepted by others.
Not so that he comes off with more of like a superiority complex of it, of like...
Which is funny. Yeah, I agree with that statement. But it's funny because he's always... Yeah, he comes off a little preachy sometimes and a little... There's no good way to put it, but... They both agree that forcing minimalism on others is never a good way. And telling them what's good about it isn't necessarily the best way to get people into minimalism. You're better off, you know, teaching by doing, showing people that you're happier, you're doing good things because you are living a more minimalist life. That means something a little bit different to everybody. Yeah, I don't remember exactly... I probably didn't bring it up the first time. I probably mentioned I was getting rid of something or dropping a bunch of stuff off or something. But then I did prompt you with a minimalism game the one year.
I'm pretty sure it started with you wanted me to listen to the podcast. And then I listened to probably not the best representation episode. I'm like, yeah, I don't like these guys. I'm not into it.
It was probably when you were moving one time or another. And I was like, oh, this might help you.
Who knows?
But to be fair, yeah, the more I listen to it, the more annoyed I get with them. So it's fair. I get a lot out of their messaging, but the more annoyed I get with them personally.
I was annoyed with them personally. But the more I've thought about it, you did introduce the minimalism game of December, day one, you get rid of one item. Day two, you get rid of two items, all the way to the 31st. And so you get rid of, like, I don't remember what the math was, like,
it's like 500 and something items.
A lot of shit. And you, most of the time you see that number at the beginning, you're like, I don't have that many things.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, you're like, wow, I have way more shit than I thought.
Like, I could play for two more months.
Yeah. Like, I kind of cheated. Like, I had a big record collection that I was meaning to get rid of anyway, but got it out. But then that's also the point of it too, is like stuff you want to get rid of, but like you haven't like pull the trigger on getting rid of it yet or whatever, like helps motivate you to get rid of it because you need the stuff.
Yeah. That's the only rule of the game is, you know, it needs to be out of your possession. So some people say by the end of the day, and so others are by the end of the month, it needs to be gone. Like we collected our stuff in our basement.
Yeah.
And then we said, okay, at the end of the month, we're taking the whole thing to Goodwill, or I mean, if it was trash, we'd just throw it out. Like, there were some things that were like, well, okay, we're just throwing out this little broken side table or something. But
yeah. But after doing stuff like that, my realization with all of it is I feel like it's kind of what you opened with. Is like, I was a little more apprehensive to a label specifically. I was like, I don't like the idea of labels for a lot of things, like an ist or an ism type shit.
Right.
I don't want to be defined by a label. I don't want to be defined as, oh, he's a minimalist type thing. But looking back into like my track record of moving places, I've thrown out so much shit. Like, I've thrown out dish sets and stuff because it's like, I don't want to move this. I don't need this. It's usually like I'm setting up to move here soon. By the next recording, I'll be held. By the time this episode comes out, I'll be in a new apartment. The idea that I have no problem purging my stuff. Right. It's usually like I accrue stuff during my stay in places. By the time it's time to like transport your shit from one spot to another, that's when I really look at, yep, don't need this. Eh, I got this. I can replace that easily. I don't need this. This means nothing to me. Toss it out. Which is good. It can get a little bit to the extreme to where you like throw something out and then 2 months down the road, you're like, fuck, I could use that. Like, I could have used those extra plates, or I could have used this or that.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's the extreme, which would be like Spartanism, where you literally can't stop getting rid of things. It's literally the opposite of hoarding, of being a hoarder, where instead of collecting and piling and not being able to let go, you see no value in possessions and have this urge to constantly get rid of everything and not own anything.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that far with it.
Yeah, you don't want to get that far. Like, that's literally a mental disorder. So
yeah, but I'm definitely not a hoarder by any stretch.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to transporting places, moving from place to place.
I mean, I think, and generally being intentional about your belongings. I mean, people wouldn't necessarily walk into my house and go, oh, that guy's a minimalist. Or like, I mean, you would go, oh, that's a pretty clean, tidy house. Like, I remember one of the, in my old place in the townhouse I was living in, there was a big townhome neighborhood. One of the utility guys or water or something, they'd come through and they were checking. It might have just been the city inspector. I had to check all the properties. And they literally had to check that you had like your smoke detectors and something with your water heater, blah, blah, blah. And it was about midway through the day. And he comes and looks at mine. As he was leaving, he goes, you have the cleanest house I've been in today. I was like, oh, thank you. I was like, I didn't, like, that's just the way our house is. Like, because we don't have a lot of things to make it messy.
Yeah. And going back to like what you just said too, like I've been to your house. I've been to that house specifically about being clean, like free of clutter.
Yeah.
You have decorative pieces, you have art pieces, but like you said, like everything is intentional. Like everything occupies a space intentionally. There's nothing that's just in the way. Everything, even in like a decorative fashion, everything serves a purpose there. You have like that little Eiffel Tower sculpture that it's just like in my head, I see something. I like seeing that there, but I don't have the eye or the mind to do that in my own space of like having a decorative piece that actually pulls the room together or pulls that specific side table together. But when I see it in like your space, it's like, oh, that works there. Like, it's just that it doesn't serve an actual purpose, but it's visually pleasing and aesthetically pleasing in this scenario.
I've moved that sculpture, by the way, to be, it doesn't pull the space together anymore.
I'm saying in general, just anything decorative.
There are many, many pieces in our house that I would get rid of, but that we have because most of them, my wife made them. So it's art that she made. So she has some attachment to it. And she's gotten rid of a lot of her art too, pottery specifically. The art we do have, especially the things on the walls, we collect as we travel. So instead of getting, you know, keychains and knickknacks and this and that, we'll get art. And that's what we use to decorate the house. Yeah. Because then we go, okay, one, this, it does fill out the space because otherwise you have blank white walls. And it can drive some people crazy to live in a space like that. Not me necessarily, but some people. So yeah, that adds a little depth to our living space. And it is a reminder that it's something that can be like, oh, hey, that was that time we went to Canada, or that was that time we were in Qatar. You know, that was that time. You know, so.
And then I think that's something we talked about of not specifically minimalism, but the one lady in the sparking joy thing.
Oh, what was that? Marie Kondo.
Marie Kondo with, it doesn't serve a direct purpose, but it brings you joy to see. It reminds you of the vacation you took. So it's worth keeping around.
Yeah, I don't necessarily live by the, like, I'm not a hardcore minimalist in the, like, it has to be functional, it has to be purposeful, like, has a use. But again, back to that, where I opened with the intentionality, you know, we have this for a reason.
Yeah.
And if that reason is it fills the space and is a memento of this time that we spent in this specific place and can spark those memories, then hey, it's a good thing to hang on to. I don't have many things in my office or on my office walls. The very few pictures I have are family. And the one thing that I just ordered a frame for, which we talked about this in the happy hour briefly, is an old map that my grandfather brought back from his service in Germany. The things I choose to decorate with are also my personal artifacts, I guess, personal, you know, things that spark memories for me. Instead of me having a photo album or a shelf of knickknacks here and there, I decorate with those things that are special.
Yeah. And again, something I think we talked about before, being intentional with your decorating, something sparking joy.
Mm-hmm.
I had the picture on my phone for a minute because we were going to post it, but then the audio wasn't recorded. Something I talked to a friend who's, I believe, a psychiatrist. I'm not quite sure what her actual title is, but does that sort of thing. Talked about sparking joy. I have my collage of, like, my school pictures. Like, one's like a glamour shot. There's second grade, sixth grade, fourth grade, ninth grade. Like, I just made a collage of myself once. And that's hanging on my wall now. That's going to be hanging on my wall in my new place. And it's such a stupid piece to have, like, on paper, even visually, just looking at it. But it's one of the things, like, I made it in probably the darkest part of my life. Like, the worst I was in all facets of life, like mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, the worst time I went through. One day I just made this. I just made a collage of, like, old pictures of me. No real reason. It's just, I just decided to do it. And I looked at it. I was like, this is stupid. This is the dumbest thing. But it made me laugh every time. Like, so, like, it literally, like, sparked joy. So even in, like, the darkest point of my life, I'd see that on the wall, and at least like, it'd still make me laugh, or at least make me smile a little bit, to where it's like, okay, I can still feel happiness a little bit. I can still feel that emotion. Keeps me from just falling into, like, the black hole of all that. It's just, so I still keep it around because it's right above my computer here, right above my desk, and it's still the dumbest looking thing ever, but it makes me smile. So I was like, that's sticking around for a while. Basically until, like, I find a actual girlfriend or even wife, and it's like, we're not putting the collage up. It's like, I'm not getting rid of it. But then that's the other thing I brought up too before. It's like, the only time I've thought about getting rid of it sparked joy also, of, like, throwing it out and the thought of somebody finding it.
Yeah,
like, somebody just, like, dumpster diving, and they find this collage of this same kid. It's like, what is this? Like, who did this? Who is he? And then imagine just that going on, like, some hipster's, like, their den.
I thought about that. I had the same feeling when I threw out a bunch of my drawings from my freshman year of college, because I was in an art class, because I was an architect. And we did so many drawings, still life stuff. So shadow studies. So there's lots of shapes and fruits and landscapes that were just all pretty rough sketches and charcoal stuff. There were some nude model sketches and charcoal drawings and things in there. And so when I got to the point where I was starting to get rid of a lot of things, and I believe it was one before we were moving one time, it was kind of tough because, like, I mean, it is, some of it was decent art. And I was like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to hang this up. I'm not going to actually do anything with this ever. You know, I don't need pictures of it. I don't need to be reminded that I can, a 50-year-old naked woman, like, it's fine. So I didn't just like ball them all up and throw them out either, but I like left the portfolio beside like the dumpster, essentially. And I was like, someone's going to find this and be like, what the, or like, there's going to be some kids going through there and just find a bunch of drawings of naked old women, some, like, and men.
Preteens in Jersey jacking off to your portfolio.
Of a naked 50-year-old woman. Hey, on the same page, there was a middle, like, not even middle-aged, like, 30-something guy, too, so.
Well, that's going to be the one kid that's like, oh, no, I'm looking at the woman. I'm looking at the woman. But then just eyeballing the cock.
Hey,
live your truth, help, bud. It's all someone good.
Someone discover who they really are.
Or if you helped
if I help some youth questioning discover their true sexuality, then see, it's my worth had a purpose in the world.
There you go. Intentional. That was the intent.
I could throw some porno mags with that too, so it's fine.
Whereas if a fucking, if a collage of like a young boy going through the years gets found by a certain adult male who fancies it, that'd be a little bit in the opposite direction.
The no, you mentioned like you making that during a really tough time. And I thought back to when I first really got into minimalism, and it was in New Jersey.
Real quick, before you get to that, just one last thing about this piece, like looking at it again, it really, like, knowing like the age range of it, like of each picture, like you can really see the evolution and de-evolution of my jawline. Like when I was really young, there was like a pronounced jawline. As I got older, got chubbier, it went away. And then my freshman year picture, I have like a really fucking defined jaw. I'm like, what the fuck? Where'd that go? Anyway, go ahead.
So I was thinking back to when I first got into like minimalism and started thinking about the things I own. And it was definitely during, not necessarily a really tough time, but a transitional time for me where I was in New Jersey. I hadn't really made a whole lot of friends there yet. You know, wasn't really sure what I was doing with work and was kind of just stuck in the day. Like I wasn't doing a whole lot of anything and didn't really know what to do. And I think focusing first, like having that thing to focus on and like, hey, like what can I get rid of? What don't I need? And like essentially gamifying my life in that way led to not having to worry about that stuff and being able to focus on, okay, what's next? Like, what can I do with my career? What can I do with this? Like, how can I be more social with it? Like, how can I definitely got rid of a lot of that extra clutter, which was nice. I think we do weird things when we're in transitional phases like that, that help us get through for sure. Well, hopefully in your move, you can figure out, not necessarily that you have to get rid of more things, but if you come upon things, you'll have an easy time getting rid of them and you'll have an easy move.
Oh, yeah. Because from my last move, like moving between cities is a big thing, big difference. Because I had a extended lease. Well, there was rollover on my lease from when I moved. Like I was still there. I still had a lease for a couple months. So I moved stuff in shifts. I didn't move everything all at once. So I didn't need to get like a U-Haul or anything.
Yeah.
This time I have like a couple big items to move. I'm getting a U-Haul for it.
I'll say I'd offer help, but my in-laws are coming this weekend.
Also, you're 3 hours away. But
you came down to help me 3 hours away.
Well, you were already there. I didn't come to Jersey to help you move to another city. Granted, I'm not moving to another. I am technically moving to another city, but within the realm of, because I'm crossing county lines.
Ooh.
Basically, from my last move, I did a lot of purging, and my roommate had a lot of like the essential stuff, like most of the kitchen things, all the living room things. So I didn't have much to move in here in the first place. So I'm not going to have that much to move out. But there's still like a couple things I've eyeballed in like packing. Like once we get off of this, I got to finish coordinating shit for tomorrow. Coming across a couple things here and there is like, do I want to keep this? Do I want to get rid of it? The main thing is in the garage. It's framed. So I could keep it and hang it up in my new place. But it's the fact that it's our Beer Olympics jersey that I have like in a plastic frame. Again, it's one of those ones. I'm just living by myself, so it'll be fine.
True.
But in a situation of like having a significant other and either moving in or living together,
they can't tell you what to put up in your man cave.
I know.
You need your own personal space.
But it's the idea of what the fuck is that? That's a little tacky. And it's definitely that. That's why it's in the garage right now. It's not even hanging in my room. Because it's a t-shirt that we fucking designed with beads and fucking markers.
I don't care if you get rid of it.
Do you still have yours?
I believe we have ours like tucked away in our Halloween costume stuff.
But then that's the thing too. Like especially being a married couple or just a couple that live together in general. Like you have specific crates for that kind of shit, like where you would keep like holiday decorations or like
Halloween's are really our only one because we get a lot of we have a lot of fun with Halloween and get a lot of value out of it.
But still, but you have like specific tote for a specific holiday type thing. In the same way, people would like have their Halloween decorations and then their Christmas decorations in like certain bins. I don't really have bins of things. I have a bin of just random things. But then again, I don't have that enough things to necessitate specific bins.
That's fair. I feel that's a whole other thing, though, of like, all right, if you have enough stuff that you need to organize in bins, do you have too much stuff?
Yeah.
That's a whole organization and cleaning it all as a whole other different conversation, but.
Or when you have stuff organized into separate bins, when the bins are taking up too much space, like, do we really need a bin for just hand towels? Maybe we don't need that many hand towels. It's good to have hand towels.
Rethink
like,
your priorities, people. I like to say it's not that hard to live intentional, but it can be hard to live intentionally. So I don't know. Like, fuck it. We'll open it up. Let us know your thoughts on minimalism and owning shit. And or
all
give us tips.
Seven of you.
Hey, fan, let us know.
On the living intentionally stuff, too. But then looking at my experiences from the opposite end of that of like going a little too far into getting rid of things.
Yeah.
We're planning on going because I'm going to live near an IKEA and I've never been to IKEA. So we're going there tomorrow, especially since it's like, oh, well, I have a fucking van. So if I need some kind of furniture and the price is right, I can transport it. Doing that, like my sister was talking, like, well, what kind of stuff do you need? And I realized like I didn't really put any thought into things. Like I could probably use an end table, like a bedside table type thing. Probably could use a coffee table, stuff like that. And then I let her make a list of not stuff that we're gonna get, but stuff that like she thinks could work, or I at least to look at, not like a specific shopping list.
Yeah.
And other like stuff she was asking about, like kitchen stuff. I was like, well, I don't have any pot holders or like dish rags, so I could probably use those. And then thinking dish rags, I was like, probably use some like washcloths and stuff for the bathroom. And then I realized I have one towel. So probably can get some bath towels.
What do you need, like two?
If I have
when you're washing one?
If I have a guest, like if somebody stays at my place, yeah. We'll just have like a guest towel and like guest washcloth type thing to where
so
we don't
maybe four because, you know, you might need to dry Molly off once. So, yeah.
Yeah. But like not a situation like when you came to visit. It's like I have an air mattress, but nothing else. I don't have a blanket. I don't have an extra pillow. I just have the air mattress.
There's a part of me like my wife and I have talked about like tiny house living and things like that. Like if we could ever
that's
do
what
that.
We were going to talk and about. That was the main thing. That I mentioned.
And she's like, oh, yeah, we could totally do that. Blah, blah, blah. I look at her every time. I go, I could totally do that if it was me and maybe me and my dog. I don't want to do it with you.
Yeah.
I love you. You're my wife. I don't want to live in like 200 square feet with you. I can't do it. One of us would murder each other.
Yep.
It would not be possible. I could not do that with another person. If it was just me and I had domain over my own space,
yeah,
I could live with like two shirts, two pairs of pants, a towel. I'd be fine. Like,
yeah. But then that's also like, I'm the same way, but in a sense of you're getting beyond minimalist and getting more into survivalist. Like, we could live with very few resources and just survive. Just on, if anything, on spite alone, we can make it through like some shit times. But like, and I've thought about that too, because those have come up in conversation and like news and stuff. Like, some of those houses, those tiny houses, are super fucking expensive though.
I mean, a lot of them have so much like, have so much tech wrapped up in them, and they're engineered in such a way where there's so many material, like there's a lot that goes into it still. And I mean, if you're on a trailer, you're essentially paying for, you know, having the system to tow that around wherever you want to go. I mean, you still have plumbing and electrical, and there's a lot that goes into it. And I had friends who built a tiny house and traveled the country in it, but
because granted, I'm moving into a studio apartment, which is two or three times the size of one of those houses, but with less stuff. And then also people on top of you. And then you have to have a hallway and shit like that. Where a tiny house, you have much more autonomy with it. So there's definitely benefits to it. I can see myself, like, again, being that I'm single, I live, which is me and my, I think the biggest thing would be the dog, like needing a little more space for her. If I was just living by myself, I could probably easily do it. I feel like my thing is I'm not claustrophobic, but judging by the last like mental health test I took, like online test, I have severe anxiety. So it's not really claustrophobia per se, but is an offshoot of like getting anxiety over being confined.
Yeah.
I don't, there's a gray area in there, but
you definitely have to be somewhere where you don't have to be in your house. Like, the house is just a vessel for cooking, washing, sleeping.
Yes.
Essentially it. You need to experience life outside of your dwelling at that point.
Yeah, not like a trailer park of small houses. You're like out in like a field or out in like a canyon.
The friends who had a tiny house and they traveled the country and they worked remotely and had jobs that allowed them to travel, they were always in locations where they were either near the coast or in the mountains or had big national parks nearby, like somewhere they could go hiking and all kinds of other activities, or near a large enough city that they could always get out and go do things. And like, they had a whole community. There's a community of tiny house people that no matter where you go, you can network with them and talk with them and hang out with those people. So like, you have to be social, or not even necessarily social. You can go hike and explore on your own.
Yeah.
If you're just locked in there, I mean, some people can do it. We took a vacation a few months ago, like right before Christmas, actually the week before Christmas. And we were in a tiny house in the middle of nowhere, Georgia, on the side of a mountain. And we were there for like 4 days. And thankfully it was on the side of a mountain, because after, you know, your full second day, you're like, all right, I need to do something. So sit outside, start a fire, go hiking up a hill, walk the dog. Like, we had him with us, like just sitting in there all day. I mean, it's fine. Like, you can read, you can write, you can do things. And I did. But after a while, like, you just got to get out of there. That's what I've always said. Like, I love my space, but I need to go do things.
But then that was the thing too, when I was in college and coming to the end of one of my leases, to where it's like, oh, I either got to re-sign here or I got to move somewhere else. In my back of my head, I was like, if I didn't have the dog, I'd easily just live out of my car. Like, I have a gym membership. I can shower and brush my teeth and stuff at the gym. I got friends. Like, if I need to crash on a couch once in a while, I can do that. But for the most part, I could, if it was just me, I could easily just live out of my car. I don't have that many priorities in that. Granted, it would get rough after a while.
It's definitely become a thing. Like, you see a lot of like TikTok people and Instagram people like living out of their cars, like just
The van builds.
Maybe just a van. Like, there's a few that are just out of the cars too.
Well, yeah, but have you seen like the van build videos?
Yeah,
which is like a take on the tiny houses, but like people buying a van, gutting it, and turning it into an apartment, and doing the same thing of traveling with it. But
it's just you talk a about van. Tiny homes and van. Like, you think about it, if you're living in like a tiny studio in somewhere like New York or San Francisco, like, it's not much bigger. I mean, at least you're on wheels if you're in, you know, in a van or a bus or a tiny home or whatever it is. At least you have the freedom to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, and back to the minimalism thing, I think that's just, it's an offshoot of that, right? Like, not all tiny house people are minimalists, but it definitely helps, because when it's essentially being very intentional about your space, right? Your living space. It's almost the extreme minimalism would be, you know, not having any space, just having a backpack over there yourself and hiking around.
Or, yeah. You know, just like, there's the movie with the one guy, real story, the guy that was like Harvard grad or something, and just bought a van and just decided to live out in the wild, or as like a bus to like just live in the wild by himself. He like cut up all his credit cards, cut up his ID and everything. And was like, I'm just living out in the middle of nowhere. He there's died though.
I mean, well, if you don't know what you're doing, you should probably educate yourself before you go do something like that. But there's something to be said. It's not a new thing. I mean, it's been around for years. You know, that want to have that freedom to just go do whatever you want and not be tied down with things or possessions or places. And
yeah,
you look at, like, you know, on like classic novels, you know, you have like On the Road, like Kerouac and Into the Wild. Like, there's so many of those types of stories of people just going off on their own and doing their own thing and not worrying about their stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff sucks.
Like Catcher in the Rye. Let's talk about Catcher in the Rye for a quick second. Fuck that dude. But people thinking that's like, oh, it's a communist man. No, it's a little bitch ass boy who's just being a little bitch the whole time. Fuck that book. If nothing else about this episode, on the record, I won't be able to say, this
is off the record.
Fuck that book.
Keep yours on the record. Mine off the record. I've never read it.
I've read a synopsis.
I have no idea what Catcher in the Rye is even close to being about.
It's this dude with a stupid name. He, like, is shitty. Here, let me just pull it up real quick.
No, I'm good. I don't want
to. I just want to see the stupid name. Don't read it. Stupid. Catcher in the Rye. I accidentally googled stupid Catcher in the Rye. By J.D. Salinger. Yes. Dude, Holden Caulfield. What a fucking cuck-ass name. His depressed 16-year-old lives in unspecified institution in California after the end of World War II. After his discharge within a month, he intends to go live with his brother D.B., an author and war veteran with whom Holden is angry for becoming a Hollywood screenwriter. He's a little pretentious fuck. And he's just Caulfield. He's just this little pretentious fuck. And just like, I want to go live with my brother. But he gave up his dream of being like a writer. He's just a Hollywood screenwriter. He's just living for the man. He's just doing it for a pay. Fuck you, you little bitch. Grow up. Fuck that book. Fuck Holden Caulfield. J.D. Salinger, you wrote it, but hey, you just wrote a book. I ain't gonna fault you. Bunch of adults back in like the 80s thought this was like a communist manifesto, so they're like, oh my god, kids can't read this. It got banned in schools. Bunch of fucking idiots there, too. This took a turn.
On that note, I don't know where we went, but
this has been a waste.
No. We shut up. Shut your mouth. We haven't let people know in a long time. Is it in our outro? Our email and Instagram and shit?
The email and Instagram is, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fine. It's in the outro every week.
This has been Wasted Information. I'm Jimmy.
I'm Brandon. Jesus.
I just got fucking heated about a book I've never read. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard and want to keep up with the show, make sure to subscribe on Spotify, Google, iTunes, or wherever you go to for podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at WastedInfo or email us at wastedinfopod@gmail.com. Until next time, this has been Wasted Information.